Welcome to the Revolutionary Health Podcast. I am your host, Stephanie Center. I am a licensed clinician in search of how to live a meaningful and healthy life. I challenge both traditional and functional medicine ideologies in search of truth and wisdom. I allow room for curiosity and always keep an open mind. I enjoy deep conversations with my guests, giving them a safe space to share their research and personal observation, as I feel both equally contribute to the body of knowledge and human experience. Note that the opinions of my guests do not always reflect my own, whether I share that openly or not. And of course, the podcast is for educational purposes only. We do not offer medical advice. So grab a cup of coffee and join me for some intimate and unique discussions about finding wellness in the 21st century. All right. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to Revolutionary Health. I am your host, Stephanie Center. Welcome to season 3, which is incredible. I cannot believe I started this when I was working in a hospital and I was like, oh my gosh, people need to know this information. And I never thought I would still be here 3 seasons later. So really grateful for the community here. As I mentioned in my previous episode, I'm being really thoughtful with season 3 in who I'm interviewing and how to best support you, because I've gotten to know you listeners a lot better. And so we just had an episode on mindset and how to identify toxic thoughts and how to recognize them and change them so that they don't impact behavior. And now we're talking with Paris Hodges. Is it Hodges or Hodge?
Hodges.
Hodges. Paris, yeah. Hodges. Maybe I should have asked that beforehand. On really this, this is going to be kind of a nebulous topic, but kind of exploring, the feminine role, talking about finding mineral balance and why that's so important for female health, and taking a closer look at, because the things that were really done a disservice in school, I don't know if you all remember your like high school health class, but the things that Paris is going to talk about today are definitely not in your high school, like, or puberty. I don't know when we learn about, probably before high school is when we learn about puberty, but you're not going to find it in those textbooks. And it's really important to really understand your body and how it works in order to support it, right? And help it to flourish and grow. So I'm really thankful that you're here with us today, Paris. Do you want to start by maybe sharing a little bit about yourself and maybe your story? You have a really cool story, by the way.
I have a really long story, is what it feels like. It's like, how much time do we have, Stephanie?
Go for it. I think because it talks about how you got to where you are today, right? Like,
yeah.
Kind of shares why you're here. Because nobody gets into this area of medicine because traditional medicine helped them.
Exactly. I think, and this has been a big part of my journey in general, is I have traditionally always swam in the opposite direction. And part of that was because I simply never felt well. And I've never enjoyed the feeling of not feeling well, because my body was my tool. Like, for the majority of my life, I was a high caliber athlete. And to start the story way back at the beginning, I was born after my mom had experienced 3 miscarriages. And so I have an older brother and sister, and then there's an 8-year gap, which during that time, my mom experienced 3 miscarriages. And actually before my brother was born, my mom had a miscarriage. So there was it was something that had happened really often for her. Sorry, I'm on day 24 of my cycle, so my progesterone brain is not fully on fire.
But talking to a pregnant person, so I'm going to say all kinds of things.
It's great. But so that was like my mineral foundation coming into this world. And then on top of it, back in the 80s, when I was born, what was common for doctors to have new moms do was put their children on rice cereal in a bottle almost immediately. So my mom had a difficult time breastfeeding. So at 6 weeks old, I started receiving rice cereal. And then by the time that I was, let's see, I think I was around seven to eight months old. I need to look back at like family photo albums, because there's like actual pictures of when we were on a cruise in Hawaii. But I ended up contracting meningitis, and it had like the incubation period is like 14 weeks or 14 days. And so during, we were luckily on a cruise in Hawaii because the doctors back there knew exactly what I had. And then the doctors in California where we were from kept telling my mom like, oh no, she just has pink eye. She just has pink eye, and refused to do a spinal tap. But either way, things like that don't manifest in a system unless there's already some kind of mineral breakdown happening. And then the rest of my youth, I mean, I just never felt great in my body, which could also be a symptom of like, I'm a Pisces, and Pisces tend to be very dreamy and airy. And so I've always like lived kind of off in outer space, and finding like safety in my internal system just wasn't something that felt available to me. And what I really equate that to is like, I existed in a body that was incredibly overloaded with iron. And, you know, as Morley talks about, iron holds that frequency of fear. And so I was just in this habitual fear state. Then throughout my youth, I had chronic nosebleeds, which everyone would just say like, oh, well, that's just allergies. But I was experiencing the kind where it was like, they were gushing like over 20 minutes long, like to that point where you're like, should we go to the hospital? Like something about this feels slightly off. And part of the story that's woven into this, like I had just touched on, was that I was quite literally raised on a soccer field. My dad coached my older sister, and then I started racing in road races, like 10Ks prior to kindergarten. And then I was out like actually doing track races in kindergarten. And there's a lot morally, and I want to have a conversation about this, about iron metabolism in aerobic and anaerobic exercise, and the way that that impacts your iron, because lots of long distance runners end up on supplemental iron in their life, because like they're all told that they're anemic. In fact, I was just working with a client recently who is about to go off to college, and like everyone on his high school cross country team were on iron supplements. And like we were really trying, me and his mom and I were really working with him to better understand the mechanism behind that, and why like going the route of organs and everything were a much better suit for him. But either way, just that habitual stress on my system definitely contributed to even more like mineral dysfunction. And then in my, let's see, high school years, I started dancing with bulimia, which also I contribute to, you know, underlying psychological pieces of this to the mineral, like the way that my minerals were in my system. My friend Nisia Nelson so perfectly and eloquently has described it as like, minerals control our enzymes, enzymes control our hormones, and hormones control how we think, perceive, and interact with the world around us. Like they quite literally control our psychology. So the way that I was even perceiving my body in any type of way, or how I was existing in my body, was really reflective of my mineral content at that point in time. Then throughout high school, you know, habitually sick. I was just like, I was the one that was like always sick or always catching whatever was like now going around. And then, let's see, when I graduated, or no, another point to this is when I was in high school, I actually had a fasciotomy too, which is a really like abnormal operation, or even like injury to get in a way that's chronic. And so essentially it's like carpal tunnel, but in your calf. So your fascia is like so stuck and stagnant that like anytime your muscles try to expand, it won't do so. So they start to collapse inward and like cut off the circulation in your leg up to your heart, which can be like incredibly life threatening. And so they have to go in and like cut the fascia. And I think that there's even more to all of that in the relationship with iron and magnesium and everything else in my system. But either way, I went on to compete in college and again was like chronically ill. But at that point in time, I was also really in the depths of bulimia. And so it was all just very reflective of what was happening with my body. When I was 22 years old, I experienced my very first miscarriage. And I was engaged at that point in time, and which already tells you then an awful lot about like how my health status was. And I was really truly like so disconnected, like from my cyclical nature, from my body, and everything else. And then, you know, fast forward, when I was 25 years old, my health started to decline even more rapidly. And after the miscarriage, they had done a DNC and like my body completely flared up after that. The doctors eventually diagnosed me with like celiac at that point in time. And then fast forward a couple of years, I was told that I might have leukemia. They thought that I had lupus. Then they told me that I had endometriosis so bad that I would probably never be able to conceive. And then I was offered my very first hysterectomy at 25, like as an option of like, well, you know, it's either birth control or a hysterectomy. I was like, wow.
Those are my options.
Really cool. Which in the amazing way that God and the universe works, a couple months later, I ended up pregnant with my son, and which was a complete miracle in so many ways, my sweet little rainbow baby. And then the next like following chunk of time, I just like habitually sick. And so just not well at all. And after I gave birth to my menstrual cycles again, which were already incredibly what I would describe as debilitating. I mean, I was losing like a pint of blood a day for up to like 7 days. It was really, really crazy. And also then taking high doses of iron supplements.
Okay.
I cringe every time I think about the amount of iron that I was taking.
Almost like your body knew we need to dump this. We need to dump this.
Oh, that's exactly what was happening. And it's been amazing to me to watch how my body has changed over the past year and a half. My healing journey really shifted about almost 3 years ago, but especially the trajectory of my healing in the past year and a half has been like incredible. And I don't exist as that individual anymore, but that's exactly like you nailed it. Even when I was a child, what was happening with the bloody noses, my body was like, let's get this iron out. Let's get this iron out. Cause I was also, consuming high amounts of like malto meal and like, you know, all of these like fortified, grains and foods that, you know, that I was totally overloaded with iron. And you also get into the conversation of how much margarine, you know, those of us that grew up in the 90s like were consuming, like huge amounts of margarine, just like shocking. But either way, then right before I turned 30 is when I started on the healing path from bulimia, but that started to allow my body to heal on even deeper levels. And then in 2019, in the beginning of 2019, I ended up finding out that I had cervical cancer. And then like the rest of 2019 became this like just downward spiral of a health crisis. And I was so sick until I finally like really hit the ground floor and was finally like, okay, like we got to figure this all out. And that was around the time that I ended up deciding to end my relationship with alcohol and like walking through different programs to help support that. And was really beautifully eventually guided to Morley's work. And the one thing that like was really impactful prior to that was, or the part that I think is really beautifully woven into all of that story is I was already innately starting to implement different pieces of the RCP that when I finally did come across it, I was like, oh my goodness, I'm doing most of this stuff already. Like, and I had heard whispers of like copper, like I would be in different stores and they have like, you know, those copper bracelets and stuff. And for some reason I would like be pulled to it. And I'd be like, this is really weird. Like something is, there's something really interesting about this. And just different things were like popping up in my awareness, or I was naturally falling away from taking my iron supplements. Like something like just no longer felt aligned, that when I found his work and the way that he spoke about minerals being sentient beings, I was like, oh, this man gets it. Mm-hmm. And he started to connect the emotional component of everything, which is something that I really value and appreciate because there are such deeper levels to this all. Like our bodies don't just like do these things spontaneously and for shits and giggles. Yeah, we're just getting sick. They're what I refer to as secondary healing mechanisms, and it's our body's innate wisdom to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we start to manifest these different things that people might label as disease. And so either way, that path really led me towards doing the RCP. And I hadn't found work like that really landed. I mean, I've toyed around with lots of different ideas of either pursuing a doctorate in traditional Chinese medicine or like some other form of credentials that help me better understand the human body. But until I found Morley's work, nothing like really resonated in that same way that provided a really beautiful foundation for me. And one of the things that had happened prior to finding the RCP was it was March of last year, so 2021, that I had signs that my cervical cancer was starting to like come back. And I was like, okay, we need to get to the bottom of like what's going on. And then about a month later is when my friend Nisia had shared Morley's podcast with Matt and Wendy Myers. And I was like, oh my goodness, this makes so much sense. And that's led me here. And a lot of, you know, what you spoke to is like the way that I really got bullied in the medical system. Like that's what it felt like. Like I was always the type of person that was like researching, like trying to figure it out. And any MD that I was in relationship with, like as a patient, was not very keen on my desire to try to understand my body. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of doctors who simply tried to just put me on antidepressants and tell me that like, oh, I was just depressed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I hear you, but there's something else going on here. Right. And, they really were not like supportive in any way, shape or form. And so in order for me to find answers, because like, I haven't enjoyed feeling like garbage. Like I don't like that feeling at all. And I do truly believe that so many of us have been conditioned to think that that is our baseline. And it's not.
Love that. Yep.
And so either way, and another part that I think is really interesting that I always forget, which is funny, is that the cognitive decline that I experienced postpartum was so severe that I would quite literally forget where I was and like words in general, including like the words and nobody had an answer for why that was. They were just like, oh, you know, pregnancy brain. I was like, this doesn't feel normal. I'm just not satisfied with that response. That was another part of it, is like, I was never really truly satisfied with the responses that I was receiving as to the reason why. Like, I've always been like, let's get to the root of why this is, like, and so that was part of what really led me on this path that I never fully intended to go on, but like, yeah. Lo and behold, here we are. And so now I work with, in particular, women, in helping like bring their bodies back into balance, in alignment with their cyclical nature. So
love that. Well, I appreciate you, you know, getting vulnerable and sharing your story. The reason that I really wanted to hear your story is, I feel like practitioners that have a story just come at things from a different perspective. Like, I like interviewing doctors that have had SIBO, who treat SIBO, right? Or because you bring a different level of compassion when you work with somebody because you've been there yourself. And I think you've said this multiple times, like, I didn't choose this path. Like, you know, I find myself, I'm in this season of, I have opposing opinions. I don't have popular opinions. And it's like, well, I didn't wake up one morning and decide, oh, I'm going to be defiant today. It was, you know, you experience a series of events that kind of lead you to where you are. And I think that piece gets overlooked a lot, but I got to the RCP in a similar way. I woke up one day and just didn't, something was wrong, and was totally dismissed by doctors for a year and a half or so. I went around that merry-go-round, but then I went to functional medicine. So I went from taking a bunch of prescription medications. I think I was like 29 at the time. I was like real late 20s. And I looked down one day and I was like, holy crap, I'm on a bunch of meds. Like, and I had never been on medications before. But then I went to functional medicine. I looked down one day and I was like, holy crap, I'm on a bunch of supplements. What's, and I didn't feel any better in either program, right? Like, neither one of them served me. Neither one of them helped me. And so I kind of continue, just like yourself, continue to search. And I really resonated with this idea of minerals, because they are the foundation to all of the things. And I love the way you put it. Minerals are the foundation to enzymes, which are the foundation to hormones. So why do we spend so much time focused on our hormones when we could be not to discredit, I look at hormones every day, not to discredit that, but we need to go, okay, well, if your hormones are off, why is that? Because your hormones aren't off because your hormones aren't off. Just like your thyroid isn't sick because it's your thyroid's fault, right? That's indication that something else is going on. And when you peel back all the layers, in my opinion, the foundation really is those minerals. And we do live, one thing you probably know that I like to read about is glyphosate. And I think that is a huge reason why we are so mineral depleted, because we spray stuff on our crops that really strip minerals. So even if you're doing all of the things and you're eating all of the produce, you're not getting what our grandparents were getting when they ate an apple, right? You're not getting that nutrition. So.
Oh, totally. And you think about too, like those of us who grew up in any sort of like suburban area, how much that stuff was like used. Roundup was used on like sidewalks and on like lawns and everything. I mean, I want to be delicate in how I word this, but like I exist in a familial unit that still is becoming used to some of this information. And like Roundup exists in my parents' garage, and it like, I've tried to have many conversations around that, but even that for me, like when piecing these things together, like I grew up around this stuff, like all the time, it makes sense how I got to the place that I did, and then why it's also taking me like a longer time to really get to the other side.
No kidding. I'm really grateful. My mom grew up on a farm in Indiana where they didn't use that stuff. Mm. So I grew up with a mom who gardened, and we didn't have spray, you know, our tomatoes in our backyard were delicious. Not like the tomatoes you buy at the grocery store today.
Oh yeah.
But it's just, yeah, so interesting. So can you tell us more about, because I follow your content on social media, and I'll link your social media stuff in the show notes, but I really love you approach healing, and specifically you speak a lot about the cycle, a woman's menstrual cycle, how to be not just support it, but be in tune with it. I think a lot of women, you do a lot of quizzes, like tell me if this is follicular or luteal phase. And I almost wonder, like, how many women actually know what those phases are? Because I don't remember learning that in school. That was a choose your own adventure sort of deal down the road.
Yeah.
But that's basic biology, right? So I guess what I'm trying to ask you is, can you speak more to kind of how you approach that work and how you view a woman's body and help support that?
Yeah. And I think this goes back to part of what you were saying too, of like, why do we only focus on the hormone, like part of it? And to me, like, I think the way that we start to get people to really understand why minerals are important is we have to enter the conversation at like, first of all, we need to understand our basic biology and makeup. And part of this, like part of what I bring to this conversation too, in general, that I share out in the world, is that I existed in the world of entheogenic plant medicines for a while. And there's a lot of people that come to that work, and it's really beautiful and super transformative, but there's so many women who are disconnected from their menstrual cycle. And it's like, you don't need another ayahuasca ceremony. You don't need another like mushroom trip until you're actually able to sit down and tell me what part of your cycle you're in. Because a lot of what it is that you're experiencing is really reflective to the energetics of your menstrual cycle, which, like, again, our minerals play out in a very particular way that then our hormones begin to reflect in a very particular way. And we've been so conditioned to just chase things that are really high or chase things that are really low and try and like bring things back into balance like that way. And it's, to me, not the way to really nourish ourselves from that deeper level. And so, you know, back to like also your previous point of like, many of us don't come to this because it was like naturally, you know, information that we were given. I didn't find out about my menstrual cycle until I was in my 30s, which to me is just like absolutely insane.
Yeah.
It's so insane. I mean, part of that was because of my history in being an athlete, and like it was praised to not have a menstrual cycle. Like you were grateful to not be bleeding because then it wasn't getting in the way of your race. Like how crazy is that? Like you're really trying to turn off your biology. And we can look out in the world around us and how marketing has used it to think that we are victims to this act that happens almost like to us, that we like are bleeding and we need to hide it and we need to cover up the smell. Like there's all of these things that are like kind of shoved in our face all the time, that unless we've been taught differently of like, first of all, your menstrual cycle is your fifth vital sign. It is the biggest indicator of what your health is. And I feel like the world of like personal growth and personal development has become really big, and you can really use your menstrual cycle to better understand yourself and like grow in general, as well as begin to like really transmute anything when you come into that deeper alignment. And there are so many women who actually don't have that information, who can't name their follicular phase, their ovulatory phase, their luteal phase, or know the length that their menstrual phase is supposed to be. They don't know that your fertile window is 5 to 6 days maximum when you can actually get pregnant. And I've had this conversation too with a lot of like sexual partners who are like so blown away that I'm not on any kind of like contraception. like hormonal contraception. And I'm like, that's because if you actually understand what's happening, where you are in your cycle, you don't need that.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I take this in and digest it for a minute. You're good. I tell a lot of my guests, I'm not the kind of person that when you're talking, I think of the next thing I'm going to say. I'm actively listening to what you're saying and taking it in. And for the listener, I really wanted an organic and authentic conversation with Paris. So I did not pre-write questions because I wanted to see where this conversation would go. But I know a lot of you listening are women that are menstruating. You're of that age. And I'll speak for myself. I was not taught any of these things. And I think knowledge is power in this area. And once you really understand your cycle, once you really understand nourishment, like you can be more intuitive with your healing. And you brought up an interesting point. So I'm the kind of person where I have a period I'm pregnant now, but I have a period every 28 days. Come hell or high water, I'm going to have a period every 28 days, except if I had like the flu or, those times, those moments where I was sick or had strep or, whatever you pick up, those were the only times where my period was off. So for me, I knew really early on that, when you're sick, that's when you don't get your period on time. And that's like, I was able to connect those dots so when I hear people that, I don't think that's common anymore. I think most women can't predict their cycles. They're kind of all over the place. And it just, and I also think that speaks to my own mother's health and maybe her mother's health of growing up on a farm and having access to healthy and diverse food. And my mom had a bunch of horses, so she was constantly in the mud and I think just had a really healthy microbiome before having me. And I think that I've definitely benefited from that, but it's just interesting that your cycle, and I love that you call it the fifth vital sign. I've heard that before. And it really is, if you can know your body and know where you're at in your cycle, you can use that. I feel like I'm saying this over again in just different ways, but you can use that information to your benefit.
Well, it's not even to your benefit. It's also when you are in alignment, nobody else has control over you then. And I think that's a really like important thing to bring into conversation these days, because like I find that a lot of people are in a very reactionary state as to what else is happening in the world around us. And that the more that we understand our inherent power that exists in being in alignment with our cyclical nature, that then nobody else has any sort of jurisdiction or authority like over what happens in our system, because we can actually understand how our body works and how to really like move through anything at all, which to me just begins to like further open up the conversation about like why minerals are so important and then how to get things back into alignment. Because like you were saying, you started to understand your cycle and like the impact of things, like when you would catch the flu or strep throat, and you see how these energy deficits would create like a distortion, like in the cycle, where you're like, oh wow, now I can understand why it's important for my mitochondria to have the ability to create energy. Because like in a normal cell, there's 5,000 mitochondria. And in a mature woman's egg, there's 500,000 mitochondria. Like how crazy is that? And that's, the egg is the largest cell inside of the body, but that's how much energy it takes to actually create an egg, which by the way takes 90 days to even mature. And so you like, then plus you talk about like the energy to even like release that. And so this is where it starts to like funnel back to why the mineral piece of this entire conversation is so important, because it takes so much energy just to be able to ovulate, which is like our potentiality to create not just life in the world, but that's all of our creative energy as a woman, and our ability to like bring anything to life in this existence. And so, like, you know, to me, that's why this conversation becomes so important, and why we need to really understand our cyclical nature, and then like peel back that deeper level of, okay, now I can see why the mineral piece to this all is like vital. And it's not just in our bleeding years either, because like the way that we were in relationship to our bodies and to our menstrual cycle in our bleeding years dictates the way that we walk through menopause, when we even go through menopause too, which we're not actually supposed to get to until we're 58 years old. And I have so many women in their early 40s who are like, oh yeah, I'm perimenopausal. And I'm like, you are too young to be perimenopausal.
Why is that? Can you explain that a little?
Why are we seeing it so early?
Why is it at 58? I haven't heard that number. I'm so curious.
Well, there's actually, I've heard this from a couple different places where it could be even later than that. And there may be evidence that like a woman never actually like stops making any eggs. I think part of what we're doing and part of what, this is a working hypothesis. I don't have peer-reviewed journals to back any of this up.
We don't care about that here.
But if you were to really study a lot of like cultures, I have a friend too. We were just, I think, one of my girlfriends told me that it was her grandmother, or her great grandmother had twins at 58 years old.
Wow.
And like, if you go and study like other cultures, there's women late in life still giving birth.
Yeah.
And so you start to like question, wait a second, like, why is everyone in the quote unquote modern world suddenly walking into menopause in their early 40s and thinking that that's when their menstrual cycle is supposed to end? And then that's when we start to look at things like glyphosate, and we look at the iron fortification program, and we look at how saturated fat's been completely eradicated from the American diet. And you start to like question some of these things. But I don't believe that we're supposed to actually walk into that crone phase of our life of menopause until much later on. And I really believe that like so many of us are experiencing this at alarmingly earlier ages for a whole slew of different reasons that we need to really start questioning. Because in my opinion, what the medical system is really great at doing is moving goalposts. We've hyper-normalized so many things that like aren't normal. And we are so afraid to actually say that, like that this isn't normal, because we've become a culture that wants to be so inclusive that our fear of excluding anyone is, to me, keeping a lot of people incredibly sick and like supporting the trajectory of disease in this country, because we're so afraid to go like, wait a second, the emperor is actually parading around without clothes on. Like, can somebody like point this out? And if you do question it, then you're suddenly like blacklisted, and you have like a whole red X all over you. So either way, that's sort of some of my thoughts on the whole menopause discussion.
Well, okay. So I'm like, so excited.
It opens up lots of cans of worms.
Well, because that's one thing that's just never no research to back this up. It's just something that never set well with me. This idea that women, like age, maybe that's the wrong way to say that, so early in life. And I know plenty of women listening that will say 35 years old is a geriatric pregnancy. Yeah, right. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of women are insulted by that because, there's not truth to it. That's not geriatric. You're not geriatric when you're 35 years old.
And I sure hope not, because I'm 35.
Right? I'm right behind you. So I'm just like, and I know friends that are like, well, I need to have a child before, you know, this point so that I can do it at home or whatever. And they don't say, no, you're geriatric. You need to. And it's like, why are those the parameters? Why do we exist in that? And I love what you said about moving goalposts. That reminded me of like Michael Hollick and the vitamin D scale, that we moved those goalposts. So now everybody's vitamin D deficient, even though it's like, if we were using a scale from 30 years ago, like nobody would be D deficient. So just moving around those things, or even in my work. So over the pandemic, occupational therapy, speech therapy. I don't know if you are familiar with this physical therapy, but the CDC has changed those goalposts because so many kids needed therapy that they were like, okay, well, if you're experiencing this sort of functional, like the developmental disability, but you're not quite to hear yet, then you don't need therapy, because they were overwhelmed with referrals. And it's like, why are we moving these goalposts, and who is that really serving? And is it even accurate? And what kind of information are we feeding that's really dictating how we live our lives?
Oh yeah. Oh, when that came out, I was so outraged. I was so scared. Oh my goodness. Like that's a whole rabbit hole. But this is to bring it back even to our menstrual cycle. This mm-hmm. is part of what's happened with the pathology of PMS. Also, we've hyper-normalized mm-hmm. like dropping progesterone levels because of all of the like endotoxins in our body, as well as the xenoestrogens that mm-hmm. are contributing to that misproportion of progesterone and estrogen in the body, which, as we know, goes back to a whole like iron dysregulation, iron, copper, and retinol issue, because what our body needs in order to actually create progesterone, which is our body's natural Xanax, like your luteal phase. So approximately day 19 to 28, 31, whenever it is that you bleed, it's that period of time after you ovulate, when people usually try and say like, you know, they have like higher cravings and they tend to be mm-hmm. like so outraged and everything. Like that's what you think of, like generally when somebody like mentions PMS, which are all signs and symptoms of low progesterone. And what our body needs in order to create progesterone is magnesium and retinol and copper, because the corpus luteum, like it mm-hmm. from Greek, actually means yellow, and retinol is yellow. Yeah. And so it's like really fascinating. And it's our body's natural Xanax. Like it's what like calms us down. Mm-hmm. Like that should be our natural state during our luteal phase, which is part of why we get that like really gappy type of brain activity where we're just like, everything's really great. I just can't even think of words right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's really interesting. So can you speak some more to that? Cause I've had Morley on the show a few times to talk about minerals and introduce that topic, but can you talk about how minerals play a role in our menstrual cycle? Like, can you speak to the role of like how retinol works, or how, now my brain is all
over. yeah. And we might have to like, this might be a good conversation to like, another like conversation to really like break down all of the parts of it, because
I'll be open to that.
And get down to like estrogen, because we have estrogen that like is supposed to slowly rise during our follicular mm-hmm. phase. And you know, that production, no matter what, any of our hormone production is ruled by minerals. It's going to be like a magnesium thing, because like, again, it takes energy to create any of this stuff. And then it's also taking copper to make any of this like happen as well. And so it might be best if we like really dive into to like all of the bits and pieces, like at another time too, but
I'm open. Yeah. If you want to do like the 30,000 foot view and we,
yeah, the 30,000 foot view, we can totally go into. So follicular phase, which is approximately day 6 to day 13, which is when we would want to see the estrogen very slowly rising. Mm-hmm. And then we have around day 14, when we would hopefully be ovulating, but we expand that window to like a day 14 to 18. We also have that spike in testosterone. And then we have a spike in LH from our pituitary gland. So in order for any of these functions, like our hypothalamus and pituitary gland are in conversation with our ovaries, and they are sending down FSH, so follicle stimulating hormone, as well as LH, luteinizing hormone. And so these parts of our brain run off of copper and huge amounts of retinol to make any of these actions like happen, as well as cholesterol, which then, you know, takes oxygen, which then also like iron enters into this conversation. So any of these like enzymatic processes are occurring because of the minerals that are running any of this show. Mm-hmm. So then we see that huge spike, which is when we would potentially like gestate life, and like the cervix then opens also. So like, let's think about all of the minutiae of these things. Like it takes so much energy then for our body to create cervical fluid that then like helps shift the pH of the vagina and the vaginal canal so that sperm can actually like come in to be able to like gestate life. You know, the egg then travels down the fallopian tube and even into the uterus. Like this is all just taking tremendous amounts of energy for all of this to happen. And then again, going back to progesterone. So where that egg has left during the follicular during ovulation, so it grows during the follicular phase, ovulation, it like leaves the ovary and travels. And then that space where the egg actually matured and developed now secretes progesterone. And so like all of these things are happening while your body is also digesting food, your heart's beating, you're being able to actually exist throughout the entire day. And so like all of these miraculous things occurring take energy to even make happen. And as Morley so beautifully says, like minerals are the spark plugs to our entire engines, which is part of why then to me, it's so going back to like why it's so important to understand the menstrual cycle is you start to go like, holy crap, like my body needs support. And how can I actually support my detox pathways so that my estrogen is actually leaving my body? Like, how can I support my body in the best way possible with like warming foods, like during my luteal phase, so that I'm getting like mineral dense things every time that I'm putting something in my mouth to help my, because another part then in your luteal phase, like when you're talking about the thyroid, so your thyroid helps heat up your body, right? It raises your metabolism. And so when progesterone rises during your luteal phase, it's helping raise your basal body temperature in hopes that it's going to incubate an egg. And so that's another part of progesterone and how you can, like from tracking your basal body temperature, really be able to understand on deeper levels how your thyroid's doing. And then if that is declined, then we know that there's like a liver thing going on, and then likely a kidney and adrenal thing going on. So you can start to like backtrack everything and then understand again, like all of the mineral pieces, because if your adrenals are taxed and your kidneys are taxed because there's not enough minerals, then you know that your liver is going to be taxed, and then you know that your thyroid is going to be taxed, and then everything's going to slow down and your reproduction isn't going to be available. And that's when we see like anovulation, and then we see like increased prolactin levels, and we see decreased testosterone levels. And so it's all just a symptom of what's happening on a mineral level and whether or not our body can actually create energy.
Ooh, mic drop.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, that was a mouthful. How was that?
That was great. If you are open to it, I would love to have you back on to talk about, do a deeper dive into the mineral aspect of female health, because I think that just most people in general don't know about minerals, and then especially female health gets just put on the back burner. Like I think that's, and it's interesting that you say, like you talked about retinol, like if you were to Google like, oh, I'm pregnant, what do I do now? Like all of the websites say, stay away from organ meats, stay away from, you know,
so scary to
and
me.
It's like, well, because they're worried about vitamin A toxicity. And they even say that. They even say it.
Well, this is part of the conversation too. This is, so when I first heard Morley talk about the sentient, like how sentient our minerals are, like this is part of the conversation to me that like we start to take this to an even deeper level also. And retinol and saturated fat to me holds this frequency of satiation with life. And we think about like the actual like physical tissue of a lot of women's bodies, and it's like so dehydrated. Like, you know, like when was the last time, you know, I always have this conversation too, like when was the last time that you actually like touched your vulva? Like when was the last time that you actually even like looked at your vulva and looked at any of that tissue? Like there's a lot of people walking around with really dehydrated tissue. And a lot of that goes back to how depleted we all are from retinol, which is to me really reflective of how satisfied are you with your life? Like where are you really living in alignment with like what it is that you deeply want to do? And then this goes into the conversation of, I swear I heard Morley say this once and he doesn't fully remember it, but he said that magnesium holds the frequency of gratitude. And I think that that is like really beautiful because, you know, Morley's coined the term, the magnesium burn rate, which means like anytime the body experiences stress, yeah, external or endogenous, the first thing to be utilized, or as Morley says, to be burned up, is magnesium. And so think about like the way that we react to any stress in our life. Like, are you in resistance of it, or are you actually grateful for it? And I've shifted that, like, to me, magnesium really holds the frequency of the approval of what is. It's not just like, oh, I'm grateful for this, because I think like oftentimes we can only be grateful for the things that feel good, when really there's so much beauty in some of those places that really like stretch us. And how are we able to really surrender to life and like open to life? Because that's another thing that that magnesium does, is that when we, magnesium helps chaperone calcium into the cell. And so when magnesium isn't available, what happens is that calcium will actually build a shell around the cell to help keep it safe. And so like the cell can't open. It can't be open to the energy of life. Like it's calcified and like controlled. Like calcium to me like can be very calming, but to me it has a frequency of like control. And then going back to like what Morley has said about iron being F-E, fear, or it's also, one of its virtue is strength. Like it ends up in the places in our tissue where our body is asking for more strength,
yeah,
but it's usually out of reactivity. and not from a place of like, of actual power. And then copper to me holds this frequency of unconditional love and power, which is part of like the beauty to me of that like frequency of like progesterone. And my friend, dear friend Nisia shared in a live that we did together that progesterone has this this sort of frequency of trust in the universe, because that liminal space that we walk through as women when we are in our luteal phase, that takes unconditional love and it takes approval of what is the magnesium and it takes being satiated by life, then we're able to actually create things like progesterone to help walk us through that threshold. Because like what it is you're about to experience with birth too is like one of the most initiatory phases that a woman can go through. And you go through those, like that transition zone, and you will go through those parts where you're like, I don't know if I can make it to the other side. Mm-hmm. And you, the ability to allow yourself to be transformed by life is really reflective in birth, but we have the opportunity to actually touch that every single menstrual cycle that we go through, because like we then walk through the shedding and the releasing of this past version of ourselves from the last month.
I like that. Yeah.
And so, and like, that is what happens when we walk through the threshold of motherhood, and every single time we walk into birth, and then that's the initiatory phase of even going into menses. And then that's the initiatory phase that we are offered in walking into menopause. And so, and a lot of this goes back to our relationship with death, because it is like a cellular death too that happens. You know, it's not just the generation of energy, it's also what's happening on that cellular level to actually like recycle everything and clear out what isn't needed. And so there's so much like beautiful reflection when we look at that like mineral level and understand you know, the reflective nature and what feels like to me like pure poetry of our bodies on that level, that then plays out in our cyclical nature, that allows us to be an entirely different person every single day.
This is why I'm so attracted to your work. Because my brain doesn't have the ability to say progesterone has the frequency of unconditional love. My brain doesn't work like that. Like I need somebody else to tell me those things, which makes perfect sense. I always tell women like progesterone's that hormone that whispers in your ear, everything's going to be okay. You're okay. We're okay. I'm okay. you can't give that to yourself without unconditional love. And so there is a beautiful story to be told there. Is there any like last thought you want to leave with our listener? I am going to have you back to talk.
Of course. I would welcome any further conversations as we like dive into more of this. This is like, for me, some of this stuff just has to like organically spew out of my mouth to then make it like make sense as to the way that to me, like I see it. And you know, I do think that there's a whole lot of like unlearning to simply remember. Like I come in contact with so many different women, and like how I even ever found any of this work was, there was a woman, her name's Jasmine Rose, and she is Humble Wild Wellness on Instagram. And she was talking about sacred menstruation and menstrual blood. And I don't know why it was, but I was like so drawn to it. And then I started to realize it was because like there was a deeper remembrance like in me. Like I think it can be really easy for a lot of us to try, we get swept up in like the minutiae of wanting to understand like the really analytical parts of like every enzymatic process and like all of this. Sure. When I really believe a lot of this is like on a deeper level, like just simply a remembrance of how we were created to be. Mm-hmm. And like to not get so stuck in like the needing to know exactly why type of thing, and just like coming back into the beauty that we are offered in choosing to be born in a female body, and like really being able to open up and like expand into that. Hopefully you can't hear the car alarm in the background. such great timing.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your time, your wisdom, your perspective. I'll link information for how you can find Paris in the show notes so you can see. I really recommend following her on Instagram. She just has, I really like the wisdom piece. And for me, I come from such a research heavy background. Like I've worked in different research labs. And because I've done that, I feel like I'm better able to recognize the problems with research and why research shouldn't be an end all be all. I think you probably get this a lot too. I'll have people message me on Instagram saying, can you show me 3 peer-reviewed articles on da 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 da? And it's like, well, is that really what you want? Is that really what's going to be helpful? Because there's a lot of red tape in research. There's a lot of it's hard to in today's world, it's hard to actually ask really good critical questions. It's more about who's funding what and who's profiting from what. And we're going to study the things that can potentially make us money. So I try to do a decent job of kind of, yes, research is beautiful, wonderful. It's not inherently bad, right? It's a helpful tool, but it shouldn't be our only tool in making decisions about our health. And so I think that's like just why I'm really attracted to you, to what you have to say, because it is kind of from this spiritual or existential sort of place. And I find just in my own experience, nobody can argue with your own testimony, right? In my own mm-hmm. experience, I feel my best when I have the ability to be intuitive about my health, when I have the ability to wake up and be like, you know what, I need eggs for breakfast this morning, or you know what, I really need, you know, like you don't get there by following those research rules. You don't get there in that manner. Oh, and I think both things, I think they're both important. I think it's important to see what literature says about things, but I think we as a society get stuck in that.
Oh yeah. And then we won't move too, unless we have research to like back up our intuition. It was really interesting to bring up such a good point. And I've heard you talk about this with like Morley and other show guests before too, about like how when you were going through your program, right, you couldn't even use like research that was older than 8 years old or something like that.
Oh yeah.
So crazy to me, like that we were like, oh no, those guys back then, they definitely didn't know what they're doing. Like we can only trust the stuff that's happening now.
Yeah. And
what's fascinating to me that in my experience on this journey, like I had this point in time, because the world will really demonize caffeine and coffee, like that I had walked away from coffee for quite a while. My nervous system also couldn't handle it, which was truly indicative mm-hmm. of the health of my liver and like what was happening with my liver. But it was around, so last year was probably like 3 or 4 months into my time, like really implementing the RCP. I started going through the estrogen waves, like where my body was starting to like detox out some of the stored estrogen. And I started out of the blue craving coffee, like in a way that I had never experienced before. And what I kept doing was like, oh no, don't want to do that. Like, can't do that. Coffee's bad for you. As it turns out, when used appropriately, coffee can actually really help like bind up and like get rid of unbound iron, as well as then help support in the detox of estrogen, because it helps support in the increasing of your metabolism. Like my body was innately like asking for exactly what it needed. And what we can end up doing in a lot of ways is essentially like using research to gaslight ourselves out of what it is that our body's like actually asking for and innately knows that it needs.
Oh, that's a beautiful point. I love that. I love that. And I'm a fan of coffee too.
when used appropriately, oh, so good. It's so good. I'm so glad that I was able to reinstate that relationship.
Yeah. Maybe if I had I never had a reliance on coffee. So it's always because I want it.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. Definitely. I worked as a barista it was during a period of time where I was just starting to make nail polish. I was working at a chiropractic office and I was working like at the ballpark in San Francisco. So I was like, I was just burning everything in my system. Like if you really want to wonder how I got from point A to point B, like I killed my adrenals. But I would have like 6 shots of espresso over ice multiple
times. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
While like not consuming any food. So.
Gotcha. Well, thank you again, Paris, for coming on the show. I'm really excited for our part 2. And listeners, if you want to get in touch with Paris, I'll have links to her Instagram. And if you have your podcast and then website, those things if you want to get in touch with her. So thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you next time. Be well and be kind.